Welcome to Beyond Treatment, Conversations for Cancer Survivors. I'm your host, Lisa Johnson-Bleski, Director of the Cancer Center of Western Wisconsin. Thanks for joining us for another conversation in this series. One thing we've been emphasizing throughout these episodes is that survivorship continues well beyond the first phase of treatment. Today, we're talking about late and long-term side effects and why speaking up about them matters. Today, I'm joined again by Stephanie Krohn, an oncology advanced practice clinician who works closely with people from diagnosis through treatment and into long-term survivorship. Stephanie helps patients recognize ongoing symptoms, understand what deserves attention, and advocate for the care they need. Stephanie, thank you for being back with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back, and this has been really fun. Looking forward to it.
Today's episode is called Managing Long-Term Side Effects and Advocating for Yourself. Some side effects for cancer and its treatment do not appear right away. Issues can emerge months or even years later, and these late or delayed effects are often overlooked, unrecognized, or dismissed. Despite this, they can have a significant impact on quality of life. Today we're going to talk about some common late occurring side effects, what to do if they arise, and how to advocate for yourself so concerns are heard and addressed. All right, Stephanie, we've got a few questions for you today.
Sounds good. Bring it on.
All right. The first one, what long-term or late side effects are most common?
Lisa, this is a really great question again. You've had so many good questions during these episodes. Thank you. You know, there's multiple different modalities that are involved in treatment of cancer. And all of these modalities can cause side effects. I want to talk first about chemotherapies and immunotherapies. A lot of these long-term side effects can include things such as fatigue, peripheral neuropathy, which is anything from numbness and tingling in the fingers and toes to pain in those areas. We can see thyroid disease develop or other endocrine dysfunctions, memory changes and cognitive dysfunction, which you'll hear us refer to as chemo brain. Sexual dysfunction is something that can develop in both men and women. We can see late GI problems or gastrointestinal problems. And in women, we can often see them go into menopause early, so they start to deal with all of those symptoms at a younger age than what they would have traditionally. We can also see symptoms similar to that in men if they're treated with testosterone-blocking medicines. Other things like infertility, joint pains, and weight gain can occur from our chemotherapies and immunotherapies. From surgery, some of the long-term effects can include permanent body changes. People may have had parts of their body removed or may now have an ostomy bag, which is where they excrete their stools. We can see scarring. We can see chronic or persistent pain after procedures in things like lymphedema, which is swelling of an extremity if they've had lymph nodes removed. Radiation therapy, which is another treatment modality, can cause some long-term effects such as fatigue, skin color changes at the radiation site, or texture changes to the skin there. Sometimes people can have pain at the site of radiation. And one of the more common things we see, especially in our breast cancer patients, is either atrophy, which is wasting away or thinning of the skin, or fibrosis, which is thickening and lifting and tightening of the skin. So sometimes a breast cancer patient may have a breast that now sits higher and looks tighter because they had radiation on that side. And again, lymphedema from radiation can be a long-term effect. In regards to very late effects that can develop months and years down the road from treatment, chemotherapy and immunotherapy can cause things such as secondary cancers involving the bone marrow. These disorders can include something called myelodysplastic syndrome or even acute leukemias. We can sometimes see heart failure or other heart problems related to these medicines. We can see hearing and vision changes, bone density loss, thyroid or endocrine disorders, and if you got some immunotherapy, we could maybe see some chronic inflammation causing things like lung problems, kidney disease, or diarrhea. And I mentioned before, with surgery, we can see change in bodily functions. For instance, as I mentioned, if someone's had part of their colon removed, they may not be able to have a normal bowel movement physiologically, so they go into a bag. Or the frequency of their bowels or consistency of their bowel movements may change. We can see other permanent body changes like scarring, puckering of skin, or missing an organ. In regards to radiation, there's a risk of some secondary skin cancers at the radiation sites, and people can get sunburn in those areas very easily. And more in the past, 20 plus years ago, before the radiation machines were modified, we could see other organs that may get in the field of radiation that can end up with problems, such as heart disease from radiation or fibrosis, thickening, and scarring of the lungs. Thankfully, those things don't occur as often because the radiation machines have gotten much better. When people have had radiation to the head and neck area, they can have permanent hearing changes, as well as dry mouth and subsequent dental problems. The other most important thing that I think we don't address enough in the oncology world is the long-term psychological effects of chemotherapy and any cancer treatment. Many of our patients will experience depression, anxiety, and even post-traumatic stress disorder long after treatments end.
Thank you so much for going through that list of long-term and late side effects that can come up for our cancer survivors. I'm curious, why are survivors surprised by these symptoms later?
You know, I think a lot of times it has to do with how patients are feeling right after their cancer diagnosis. Patients and their caregivers are often extremely overwhelmed at the time of diagnosis and early on in the treatment stage. They may not remember discussions that we had when we were prescribing therapies, or in some cases, they might not have been told. Also, when patients are in the middle of chemotherapy, a lot of them develop this survival mindset. They are focused on just getting through their treatments and getting to that next step. And so at that time, a lot of those long-term effects aren't even anywhere up front on their radar to be thinking about. Additionally, I will run into a patient from time to time who just doesn't want to think about long-term side effects. They want to feel like when I'm done with this treatment, all of this is going to be done and we're not going to have to talk about my cancer again.
Thank you, Stephanie. And it sounds like you meet patients where they're at and what information they're ready to hear at the time. So that's really appreciative.
I try to. Every patient has their own specific sets of needs, and we need to look at them as an individual and not just a diagnosis or a number.
I'm curious, are there some symptoms long-term that are easier to dismiss than others?
Oh, absolutely. So a lot of times, patients, after they're done with their treatments, will feel like, well, this is just normal now, or I guess this is just what life is going to be like. And they don't realize that some of these ongoing symptoms are actually symptoms that we can treat and manage. For instance, fatigue's a big one. People may have a persistent fatigue that can last months to sometimes even years, and they may just blow it off as, well, I'm out of shape, or I'm getting old, or again, this is just what it's going to be. But that could be related to their treatment in a way that maybe they got a drug, for a chemotherapy drug, that could be causing cardiac dysfunction, or maybe their thyroid is out of whack and we need to adjust that. It could be depression. So it's really important that we talk about these things. Another couple of types of symptoms that I know people tend to dismiss are things like shortness of breath when they're active, or sometimes a little weight gain and maybe swelling. Again, they contribute that to just getting older and gaining weight, when again, it could potentially be a heart problem. Memory issues, difficulty concentrating, being able to process new information can be long-term effects. And again, people will often feel like they're stressed, anxious, they're just getting older, and blow that off. We have testing we can do that can help pinpoint where our dysfunction is in the brain and potentially do some therapy to help with that. Depression, anxiety, PTSD are often dismissed by people. They don't feel like they should deal with those issues or have those issues since they survived treatment. They should just be grateful to be alive. And also, again, there's that fear of having a diagnosis of a mental health issue. There's stigma with that, unfortunately, a lot of times. We can often see people not feel comfortable talking about mental health issues. And another one they don't feel comfortable talking about is sexual health issues. Vaginal dryness, pain with intercourse, no libido, erectile dysfunction. We don't talk about this stuff here in the U.S. well, so people will often not bring it up because they're embarrassed or they don't feel comfortable talking about it with a provider of their opposite sex. So I think it's really important for people to remember that all of these potential issues may be related to your cancer treatment. They can often occur during and long term, and they should be talked about because they're real treatments and real issues and side effects, and they can often be treated. We just need to know about it.
Stephanie, why do you think survivors hesitate to speak up, and how does fear influence symptom reporting?
I think you hit it on the nose there, Lisa. I think fear is probably one of the biggest things that prevents patients from speaking up. I think it's several types of fear. I think there's a fear of being minimized or dismissed or judged for their concerns. We often see that when it comes to mental health issues, sexual health issues, or even cognitive dysfunction. People may fear that if their memory's not working, they're going to be told they have dementia or they can't drive, and so they just don't want to bring it up. Some people also think that they might get scolded by their care providers because they're not doing enough to stay healthy. That is so far from the truth. A lot of what you're dealing with after cancer treatment is because we've done it to you. So it's not you not doing what you're supposed to do. We've caused it. And then I think the other big fear, and probably the most prominent fear, is fear of recurrence or a new diagnosis, and then the fact that they may need to go through more treatments. It's pretty scary. People want to move on after they're done with their cancer treatments and get back to quote-unquote feeling normal. But also, they don't know what that normal is. So there's that as well. I want to mention this too, because I think it's important to talk about. I think a lot of my patients after treatments often pay more attention to their body and notice a lot of things. And so it could be really overwhelming or anxiety-provoking feeling or sensing all these things you maybe didn't even notice before because it was normal. So don't be afraid to bring those up. We can help you work through if it's a normal thing or it's something to be concerned about.
So when cancer survivors recognize these symptoms, how do they know when to go to their oncology provider or their primary care provider?
Oh, this is a really great question. In general, what I like to tell my patients is that if the symptom or concern is directly related to your cancer diagnosis or the cancer treatments, always call us. Specifically, if it includes side effects of your treatment, something you know is a long-term effect, or questions about medications or surveillance, please come to us. Any issue that is related to another diagnosis that's non-cancer related, specifically like high blood pressure and medication questions, diabetes questions, those you should go to your prescribing provider, whether that's your primary care provider or a specialist. However, in general, don't hesitate to contact your oncology provider. We will be able to troubleshoot your question and concern, make sure we're getting you to the right place, and it maybe even help facilitate you getting an appointment with the right provider if we need to.
That guidance is really helpful. What does self-advocacy look like in survivorship?
So Lisa, this is probably my most favorite question you've asked of this talk here. Self-advocacy is very important for cancer patients, and it's the process of giving oneself permission to need care after treatment, trusting your own experience, and engaging actively in your long-term healthcare decisions. You deserve ongoing attention, monitoring, and support. So I want to make sure when we're talking about this, people really understand that what you guys do as patients will really benefit you long term, meaning if you speak up and ask questions, point out concerns, we're going to be able to help address those concerns and help improve your overall quality of life and your long-term survival. So the first thing I think in self-advocacy to know is recognize your symptoms. They matter. If they're persistent, they're ongoing, they're worthy of attention. It doesn't mean when you're done with treatment, survivorship doesn't mean you're going to be symptom-free. But again, we can try to manage these symptoms and help you feel better. Speak up. Talk about those symptoms. Ask questions. Describe how these symptoms affect your daily life. And not that they're just there. If you feel like you've been dismissed or your symptoms and your concerns were ignored, keep asking. Again, sometimes we can try to move on to other things and not intentionally minimize your problem, but kind of will unintentionally just gloss over it. Go back and keep us in check. We need that from time to time. I also think preparing for your visits with your oncology team is really important. A symptom log, so you can talk about every symptom you've had. It keeps us on track. It keeps you on track with what we want to talk about and discuss. Writing those questions in, or writing them down and bringing them in, will help us make sure we address them all. And then if you don't understand something we have told you or described, ask for clarification. They're not stupid questions. There's never a thing as a stupid question. We want to make sure you understand what's going on. And then I think another thing that is super important is know your history. Know what your cancer diagnosis is, the types of treatment you had, your medications, because sometimes you may meet a new provider who isn't completely aware of all of your medical history and may miss something that could be important and related to your symptoms. I think patients may often have to ask for specific referrals if they feel like they need one. An example is, let's say you've had surgery on and had a breast removed and you have some decreased range of motion of your arm because of that. We may note that but not think about or think you may not want to go to physical therapy, but physical therapy might be able to help you gain that range of motion back. Don't be afraid to ask for that. If you don't feel your provider is the right person to be addressing, ask in the clinic if there's someone that does survivorship care and knows how to focus on these things. And then the other thing I want to point out to patients and bring up here today is know your boundaries. Sometimes us providers, we care. We want to help you feel better, help you live your best life. And sometimes we can just get a little overeager in trying to do that. And that may mean we suggest more testing, more appointments, a procedure, and you might not want to do that right now. And that's okay. You get to choose that for your life. But you have to tell us that, because sometimes we will be all gung-ho about doing this, but it's not what you want right now. So please let us know. And just remember that self-advocacy is a partnership with your care provider. It's informed participation, and speaking up when it's uncomfortable is really important.
Thank you. These tips are really helpful and beneficial for our listeners. I want to go back to what you said about speak up, your symptoms matter. I'm hearing your symptoms matter, you matter.
Absolutely. Again, I think I said earlier on today that we need to treat every patient as an individual and not as a diagnosis or a number, because that's true. Your symptoms may be different from the next person's and the next person. So we need to focus on what's going on with you during your visit and then how we can manage those things together. And this is a time when it can be about you. You don't have to worry about being selfish. Let's get you get this figured out. Let's get you feeling better.
That's great, Stephanie. All right, I have one question before we wrap up today. What reassurance do you give patients most often?
We reassure our patients about a lot of different things, but I think the most important thing I tell my patients is that you're not in this alone. And what I mean by that is that we're here for you. We are here from the time of your diagnosis to making the decisions with you about your care. The type of care we recommend is evidence-based, state-of-the-art and the most up-to-date treatments that we can. We follow research and clinical guidelines, and sometimes we even use a multidisciplinary team to talk with everyone about the best route of care for you. We also want to continue to monitor you closely for signs and symptoms of reoccurrence, other cancers, or other late effects and health concerns. And we want to be able to address those concerns promptly and thoughtfully. Every decision we make as healthcare providers is made with your best interest in mind. We are doing everything we can and will continue to do everything we can to provide you the best care possible.
Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you for sharing your time, your passion, and your knowledge with our listeners today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
As a reminder, the information shared in this episode is meant to support and guide you. It is not a substitute for your own medical care. If questions come up or something resonates with you today, we encourage you to talk with your oncology care team or primary care provider. They know your history best and can help you decide what next steps are right for you. You do not have to navigate survivorship alone. Thanks for joining us today. Wherever you are in your survivorship journey, we are glad you are here.